It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Good to see my friend, Captain Mike. Good to see you today, Sean. And it is at least, well, it's over.
It's over.
It depends.
Yeah, it's over.
It's over. Not to worry. Got lots more to do in the outdoors out there. But yeah, deer season coming to a wrap. I want to talk later on the show with you. Saw some pictures of some boys smiling with a nice buck.
Man, that's so much fun.
Good story there. And we'll talk about that as well. With a man that not only is he Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, he's a guy that likes to hunt those deer himself as well. Chuck Sykes joins us now. Good to talk to you.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How about it, Chuck?
How are you?
Doing good.
Here's my only beef. Okay, so here at the end, this would be my complaint to the state. The weather was real hot for the last few days of Zone B hunting, so I'm really upset about that. Can y'all do something next year to make sure we not have like 75-degree weather at the end of the season?
Well, believe it or not, you know, we can control everything. control the moon phase. We can control the temperature. We just schedule it this way just where we'll get a few more complaints at the end of the season.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here for just to be the complainer. Yeah, it was... We did have, you know, it's interesting, though. We had colder weather, at least down here, this neck of the woods, colder weather in December than we did really January into February. So it was kind of flip-flop this year. But people made some hay. I, what are you hearing? Just out of your friend groups and stuff, not even specifically with the job as director, what did y'all shoot? And what are you hearing? Some good deer killed?
Just to be honest with you, Sean, I probably did less this year than I have in a long time. My schedule has just been busy. Just life getting in the way of taking time to go hunt. We had some guests that shot a couple of decent deer, nothing real big. And, of course, we took out quite a few antlerless deer, put in the freezer. But overall, just from what I've been seeing on social media and some of the stuff coming into the office, it looks like it was a heck of a year for people that got out in the woods and went hunting early because we had a bumper acorn crop, so they weren't on the food plot. So we got, you know, all the complaints about that the deer weren't using food plots. But once the acorns got wet, started souring, they started coming to the plots, and deer in the rut, I mean, even with it 75 degrees, there were still people killing good deer in the south.
Also, I talked about the personal, you know, deer, because I was going to transition from that to the pictures. Y'all go look at the Facebook pages. SOAs have produced some fantastic bucks, Chuck. I mean, I'm drooling looking at some of these bucks that come off the SOAs.
Man, public land is not worth wasting your time going to hunt on.
Y'all listen to him, so you don't get in front of me in the SOA. Man.
Now, we kill, our SOA hunters kill some really, really good deer this year. There were a couple of studs killed at Portland. One really big deer killed at Uchi, and a couple of good deer killed at Cedar Creek. Have not seen the thig pen results, but the original SOAs, they stacked up some good ones this year.
Let's talk about that, too. If for some reason you've talked many times with us about it, y'all had outreach around the state, but some people might say, what SOA, what are those guys talking about? What is an SOA?
It's a special opportunity area. We bought some really nice properties partnering with Forever Wild and secured some smaller tracks in some prime areas. And look, we didn't want to just open the doors and let them get hunted to death. So we took a page out of the Western states with their draw hunts. And basically you go online, if you get selected, you and a buddy get to deer hunt for that weekend on a piece of property that you probably got 400 to 500 acres to yourself. And it's the results, of course, the people that get drawn is the best thing in the world. The people that don't get drawn is crooked, it's rigged, I'm just letting my friends hunt there, that kind of thing. But have y'all been able to hunt there yet?
I hunted turkeys. Yeah, I got drawn turkey-wise, but I have not been drawn, no, on the deer hunts. So.
Okay, so either you're not a close friend or it's not true that I'm rigging it where all my friends get to hunt.
Now, I wish you could. Yeah. But it's – no, it for people to understand, too, it's like – while it's public, but it's limited access, like you say, the hunting you get on that ground is going to be better than most hunting clubs for pressure. I mean, the pressure is lower there, you know, and obviously that makes a big difference.
Sure it does. And that's why we do it the way we do it. We want the people that get the first hunt of the year and the people that get the last hunt of the year have the same opportunity. And it's working exceptionally well.
What's the success ratio on that? Do you have any idea when somebody comes? Is it like, you know, half the people kill a deer or most everybody kills one or what?
Well, Mike, it depends on what they're wanting to do. I mean, a lot of people aren't like Sean that want to kill a big deer or like you that
That's
want
true.
To take a kid to kill one. They may be like me where, you know, they don't get to hunt a bunch. And they just want some meat for the freezer. Well, when they go on that hunt, they can kill three does. So they pop them three does, and they're tickled to death.
Sure.
Then some people want to kill a big deer, so they pass up $6 or $8 that make the minimum. So I think it's either 17 or 18-inch main beam, and they don't kill anything. So, you know, shot opportunity and harvest all depends on what that specific hunter's looking for.
That's true. That is 100% true. I mean, if somebody's killed a bunch of 140s, you know, and they go in there trying to find a 140 and they don't see it, they're not going to shoot it, you know, unless it's just an accident.
And it's not so they don't have a great time and it's a great experience to see a bunch of deer and kill a hog or two. But so I don't really look at harvest percentage. It's what we get back with emails and letters, and we sent out a survey a couple of years ago, and I think we had like 92% of the people that had hunted them ranked it good or excellent.
You can't beat that. No. That's as good a success ratio as there is anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we get nothing like that, so it is truly a special opportunity.
Now, I know there's not one of us on this show today that's even thinking about turkeys, my experience with the SOA was years ago on a turkey hunt, which was fantastic. Let's talk about that, too. It's not just for deer.
Oh, no. It's deer, turkey, hogs. We have some small game hunts where people are bringing rabbit dogs and squirrel dogs. We have some dove hunting opportunities, and even in North Alabama, we have waterfowl. So we're adding to it each year and adding more opportunities each year.
That's good. And y'all get online, go to Outdoor Alabama and see the schedule for signing up for these. Because, I mean, even amongst my buddies, they'll be like, oh, darn it. You know, they think about it after, you know, you got to kind of put a note in your phone or something, go get on it. Or I mean, y'all put it up on the website and y'all, I know I get emails from y'all on that when it's time to put in, but people got to make sure they do it.
Yeah, even I forgot, and I did not. I missed that line to register for the turkey hunts this year.
It can even happen to the director. There you go. Yep. Make y'all feel better.
Yeah, I'm not going to turkey hunt this year. I'm going to take a spring off. I need a break.
Yeah.
Y'all want to know what a lie sounds like? Right there. That's what a lie sounds like. Let's now. That's kind of the fun part, but I want to go into the not so fun part of our discussion, because we've been tracking this over time, and this move of CWD at different places in the country. Then what was it, 2 years ago? We got the first positive in Alabama. Was it two?
It was last January.
Last
so
January.
It's been
a year.
It's been 13 months.
Where are we now? What do you know? I know you did the sampling. You have a kind of a specific zone up in the Northwest where you're really focused on it, but also sampling throughout the state. Got any info on that?
We're sampling in all counties. Of course, the Lauderdale and Colbert is a high-intensity area. As of today, no other positives.
Man, that's great news.
We still got several hundred deer out to get the test results back, but we probably tested 3,000 deer this year.
Oh, wow. So a big sample. That's a pretty good sample, huh?
It is. We could always use a few more, but, you know, 3 years ago, we were probably testing 700 or maybe 1,000, and it went up to 2,000, and this year's 3,000. So we're ramping up our testing. We're doing it all over the state. And hunters, I do want to thank the hunters, especially up there in Lauderdale and Colbert counties, maybe some of them here, you down in Mobile. They really stepped up and did a great job. Look, we can go in, and some states have gone in just to get samples themselves, but hunters are hunting in every nook and cranny of every county. And if they'll work with us, we can get a far better representative sample with fewer deer than us trying to go in and do it. So the hunters stepped up this year. We've been working with some taxidermists and processors that have really stepped up. So I think people finally understand this is not a political game. This is a real thing. We're not trying to destroy deer hunting. We're not trying to destroy everybody's heritage. We want to know how bad it is, and we want to stay on top of it. And right now, today, me talking to you, I think we're in as good a shape as we can possibly be in.
Did you ever shut down some of those counties, or did you? Is there certain areas in Alabama that you can't hunt right now because of that?
No.
Or it's all open?
No.
Okay. It's the opposite.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
We don't want people scared to hunt. No.
Okay.
No. The only thing that changed for those two counties was they couldn't hunt with bait anymore. You can't feed.
Okay, I knew there was something. I couldn't remember what it was, but that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's the baiting.
Yeah, but you want the – Ryan, I mean, the way I understand it, you want people hunting. You want those samples. You want people –
Absolutely. Yeah. We need people out there hunting. We need them still enjoying the outdoors. Just provide us samples where we can keep track on the movement of the disease. And hopefully we continue at like we are at a very, very low prevalence.
And I want to talk about the science of that too, because – You know, back when this was, it was not here, but you're saying it's, you know, it can travel, you know, talk about how it travels naturally versus in the back of a truck. Let's say we now have got enough eyes open, people aren't moving, you know, bone and all that brain matter around. Are there any studies in a natural environment without people moving deer or something like that? The pacing of that, is there any kind of... I don't know. Is there any kind of calculation?
Let's don't worry about science. Let's just talk about common sense.
Okay.
Y'all have deer hunted your whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
A mature buck during the rut may travel, what, a mile or two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A doe is going to stay within a square mile. So natural progression of the disease is very slow because deer stay on their home turf. Now, granted, late stages of the disease, when their faculties are not with them, they may get in a straight line and they may walk 5 miles. But again, it's not like a deer is going to go from one end of Choctaw County to the other one. So natural progression is extremely slow. We talked about this when this first started. It's sort of like feral hogs. They do not take up country fast. The only time they take up country fast is going down the interstate on a trailer in the back of a truck.
Right? Yes.
CCD is the same way. Just because home ranges of these animals are small, it's not like elk or mule deer where they migrate. Our deer stay in their little core areas, so the disease doesn't travel fast.
So that's a prime example with the hogs. We wouldn't have the hog problems right now if it wasn't for people putting them in the back of their trucks. Alive.
That's right.
And transporting them around and putting them in different areas.
Yeah. Aren't they in every county now? Don't you have documented hogs in all 67 counties? Am I right?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's they didn't all get there just wandering the river system and the creeks and all that.
No. They didn't all come up out of Mobile and Baldwin County and end up in Lauderdale.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, talking to Director of Wildlife and Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes. Let's talk about those birds we're not interested in, too. Turkey-wise, you know, we've had some, and hopefully as we get closer to turkey season, we can have some more long-form discussions with you about that. Are we seeing anything from last year's numbers or anything where we're trending? You know, this big question across the country is what's happening with the turkeys. Different states are, you know, dealing with different problems, but there generally is a trend down.
Look, for southeastern-wide, the numbers have been trending down for probably the past decade or more. Just to be perfectly honest with y'all, we spent a lot of money, and I say we, Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, a lot of time and a lot of energy trying to come up with what we thought was the answer. I'm very confident that we found it and didn't get listened to. So, as far as I'm concerned, I'm done.
Well, that put the hay down there with the horses and get after it. What they didn't listen to, in your opinion, in the research that done, what can be done to stop the decline? Can you give me like the Wikipedia answer on that?
Look, there's like with anything, just like with you and your quail, there are multiple factors that go into it. There's, of course, habitat degradation, all the coving growth. Mismanaged timber, no burning. There's predator issues where predator numbers, nobody traps anymore, very few people trap anymore.
That's right.
So there are multiple things that will help the turkey numbers that we can't regulate. We can't make Mike trap on his property.
That's
we can't make him thin his timber and burn. The only thing as a state we have the ability to do is set seasons and backlands. And according to the research that we did, and not just late research, but historic turkey stocking data from Alabama, we're killing too many too early.
And that,
in my opinion, in our staff's opinion, in the research's opinion, we kill too many too early.
And what is that?
Name me another ground nesting upwind game bird that we hunt during the breeding season.
We don't.
No.
I don't think so. Yeah. Not even like sharp tails or any of that either, I think. Yeah, because they're in the spring. No,
turkey
we don't.
Turkey hunting started as a fall sport. Then we like to fool with them. We like to hear them gobble. We like to hear them call. We like to mess with them. So therefore, we changed it to a spring season. And look, I'm sure there's a bunch of them already being hunted in Choctaw County because it's hot and they're gobbling and they're shutting. So they're going to be gobbled out by the time the season comes in. I'm sick of hearing that.
Yeah.
They're men. They're ready at all times, but those women are not going to be ready until the time is right, which is going to be March and April.
And so if people hadn't heard this, even though we've discussed this at length, is that we are killing gobblers before they have a chance to breed hens. Is that?
Yes.
It's kind of simple, but
that's what research and what we believe is the issue, is if we will eliminate some of that early harvest, our population will help. It'll help it grow. And look, let me put this in real simple terms. Predators, forget about them. They're going to be there. Same thing with deer. If your buck-to-doe ratio is out of whack, your age structure is out of whack, your does are going to be bred over multiple cycles. All right, y'all following me?
Yeah. All right.
All right. So that means they're going to drop at different times. So if you have 50 coyotes on your property and one-third of your deer drop in June, one-third drop in July, and one-third drop in August, those 100 coyotes are going to have a much more detrimental impact to your deer numbers than if they all bred at one time and all of them dropped at one time.
Yeah, that's
that.
The,
that's that the, make sense?
Yeah, what is it called? Yeah. Predator swamping, right? That behavior when critters are left alone, they seem to cluster, though,
The same thing with turkeys. If all of those hens are bred when they're supposed to, and not disrupting the cycle, and they all lay at the same time, they all hatch at the same time, those same predators are not going to be able to get as big a, knock as big a dent in them as if they are scattered. And that, I think that's the simplest way to explain it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, most people think that the hens are going to lay in April and maybe the 1st of May, but hey, we've seen it in July that the hens are nesting.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they will open up a couple of times.
Yeah. So, I mean, if the nest gets messed up, then they'll lay again. How many times? Two or three times, I think?
Possibly.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So they are not all at the same time, that's for sure.
So it sounds like, I mean, that's what y'all can do at a state level, but you led with the fact that if somebody has the ability, private land or, somewhere that they can do change of habitat is a big part of this too.
Huge. Predator control, habitat management, those are the keys to successful turkeys.
Absolutely.
But as a state agency, I can't mandate that you do that.
Right,
so the only thing that we can do is try to get support to start the season a little bit later.
There it is.
Yeah.
Well, and we will be talking about that, I'm sure, a good bit more between now and the start of turkey season. We appreciate you taking some time with us this morning, and hopefully, we'll get to talk about this more in the future.
Sounds good.
All right. There he goes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, our buddy Chuck Sykes. We can talk about this. We get back from the break. We can talk about some of the ideas there. I mean, that's the tough thing. You know, if you're a state agency, you can't do the habitat. Can't get Mike or me or anybody to do the habitat management.
Can't do it. No way.
Now, I kind of dig that.
Yeah.
But I'm not everybody. Not everybody has the same opportunities. So we're coming right back. More Vets Untalk 106.5 Outdoors. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Big thank you to Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes. And it brings up, and we're going to talk some more deer here in a second because I'm going to talk about that buck boys got. Let's talk about that and then we'll go back into turkey talk because once I get riled up on turkeys, you know what happens. And by the way, there's still plenty of stuff going on. We'll be small game hunting. We'll be quail hunting, trying to find quail on our place this afternoon and tomorrow. So hopefully we'll get some more wild quail pictures up on the internet. It's a fun thing to do. Plus, rabbits are open. You know, you got small game. Squirrels are open. So that, I mean, even though deer season's over, you still can get out there and get after it.
There's always a hunting season.
Yeah.
Really, it is.
Yep.
I mean, 12 months out of the year.
Yep.
I mean, if you want to go shoot hogs or coyotes or whatever, I mean, you can do that anytime.
That's true.
Yeah.
And, okay, but before we go there, so let's talk about that. What a dandy buck. Another.
Yeah, it's just a 6-point.
But yeah, but, okay, Mike said, don't let him do that. Don't let him do that. Because he said it's just a 6-point, but it's because he doesn't have brow tines. He's a dandy buck.
He's a nice buck. Sure he is. And Austin Quinlivan killed that buck, and that's the second buck he's ever killed.
Well,
and
so, man, I'd have been so over the moon.
So excited. And also, Maddox Bethay. The other buck, that was his second buck that he had ever killed at the time.
That's fun.
So, oh, man, they so excited about it. Last year, I sat, and you probably remember this, Sean, I sat with Austin Quinlivan, and a buck came out. I think it was a 7-point, I think. And I said, well, that's a nice one. You want to shoot it? He said, yeah. So he stuck his gun out to the shooting house, and he got to shaking so bad, he couldn't breathe. He couldn't aim the gun or anything. And after, I don't know, it had to be 10 minutes or so, he finally put the gun back in the shooting house. I said, you're not going to shoot him? He said, I can't.
Had that much buck fever.
Oh, he was shaking all over. That's so much fun going with these kids that haven't killed many deer and see their excitement over it. It's everything, you know. As you get older, and me and you've been through all that. And hey, I still get buck fever. I got it last year in Kansas.
Yeah,
you know. But I mean, to see these kids get so excited about it, I just don't get it like I used to. These boys, they get it every time they get in the woods just about.
It's,
you know?
Great. It's a great thing.
It is. It's a great thing to be able to take these kids and take them hunting.
Yep. And, you know, I mean, they're big kids want to go hunting with you too, like me.
Yeah.
kind of watching the rut wise, you know, it's just, I think, like the director said, like Chuck said, if you, and I don't have my doe management where I should. I get that rut we often talk about. It's kind of weird because I'm in Mobile County, but I get a rut like I was in the Black Belt, mid-January, just, you know. But then because of poor doe management, okay, pointing at myself, we hadn't killed enough does, I still get a secondary that's, you know, leading up to yesterday. You know what I'm saying?
Which is going on now.
Yeah. So, yes. I mean, it's just that if I could get the doe numbers in line better, which we're going to try each year, we're going to try to do better. That I might just be able to compact it all to that one thing. But I do. I get fawns dropping, and I've showed you the pictures before. I'll get fawns dropping beginning of August.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, but then I will have, I think it was December this year, maybe even early January. I remember seeing a pair that came out with the doe, and you could still see the white, you still see the spots a little bit. It was faded.
I saw spots 2 weeks ago.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that, I mean.
I got a picture of him.
So that tells you, I mean, that we're not doing the good job we think, you know.
Yeah, spotted fawn in January. So when was that deer?
6 months, is it? Six, 7 months?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 6 months.
So when was that bred, you know? So you're looking at.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you're looking at June.
And by then it's weird, too, because even though we always say the bucks are always ready, they're waiting for the does. But the thing that makes their antlers fall off is they have a testosterone drop.
Right.
Okay, and it drops, and that's part of the process in them shedding antlers. So there is some time of year where you think he wouldn't be interested.
Right. Like, I don't understand it. How you still have spotted fawns in January. I just don't see how that's hardly possible. But I've got a picture of it on my phone.
That's wild.
I'll show you.
That's the latest I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Spotted fawn. They're probably, hey, by the way, if you got your own story, you can always send us a post on the Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. That's so there's a regular FM Talk 106.5 page, but FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on Facebook. You can check us out there and drop us. Yeah, the latest you've ever seen a spotted fawn.
Yeah.
For me, it was probably after New Year's. Yeah, it's been – so that was January too. Yeah. But they weren't – it wasn't – it was like – I rolled up the big Vortex binoculars to be able to see.
Yeah, now this isn't bright. You know, it isn't like, a thousand little spots on them or anything.
Right.
And that's another thing. Maybe some of them kind of shed their spots a little later than others do, too.
Right, because they're all individual. That's one thing we got to get over as hunters, too. We get this idea.
They're all the same. They're not.
They're not. It's just the same thing we talk about on antlers, right? And that you go, well, and I've seen this because, a lot of trigger restraint where we are. And going, man, that buck next year. That buck. Some of them just not going to do it.
That's right.
I mean, you sit and wait and wait, and you think, ah, he's going to, wow, at 3.5, at 4.5, he's going to be. And they just don't do it. And they are eating the same stuff as the other deer or whatever, but genetically they're just not going to be, you know, the antlers aren't going to get big body.
That's right.
Although I've also seen bucks that are the same age that are different in weight by 15 pounds or so.
Or more.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you look at some of these pictures, especially on Facebook, some of our friends that have game fences and, you know, they have to shoot cull bucks all the time you know, they get the best food, the highest protein that a deer could possibly get. They're both 4 or 5 years old or 6 years old, and one of them's got a 8-point that might not score, 120, and then you got others, it might be a 200 class, you know, the same age. So it's all a lot of it about genetics because they both getting the same food.
Right. So there's that. I mean, we got to – and obviously, to get them all, you know, it's funny. We'll get the people from Southeast Pond Management back on too. They talk about that with bass.
Yeah.
You know, now they've tweaked some of those things with some of the stocker bass, but they don't. They said you could put X number of bass in a pond, well regulated, and got the shad, got the crawfish, and everything. Some of them will just not get bigger than 8 pounds.
Right.
He said the tens and twelves and the stuff of dreams. He said there was a whole, what is the term they use, cohort. Same age class that went in there, and we said they had the access to the same feed. You could, he said, they're just not. They're going to be 8 pounds, which is a great bass, but
yeah.
But there's, it's just kind of the freaks that will go to the next level.
That's right.
So yeah, it's something to watch. On this turkey thing, you know, it's interesting what the director said. Now there's, and I've been listening, you know, I listen to tons of podcasts and read a ton about this stuff. You know, he laid out all these different things, and they're right. From a state agency's perspective, they can't do some of the things that need to be done. Because I guess I was getting to this on last week's show or the week before. It seems like there's people are in different camps. And there's one camp that says it's just about moving the season dates later so more hens get bred. Then there's another camp that says it's all predator-driven and you got to trap. And then there's another group over here that says, yeah, but if your habitat's out of whack, trapping, I mean, you should spend that. They're not saying trapping's wrong, but you should spend your time in habitat before trapping. Only when your habitat's right do you worry about trapping. In reality, it's probably all of them.
That's right. You know, if you wanted to max it out,
yes,
and make it the best, it's all of it, for
you know,
sure.
And that discussion is, you know, it's kind of contrary to deer hunting because we're always talking about how to keep the numbers down for deer,
right?
But we all want to max out the number of turkeys. Yeah. You don't ever hear. See, I mean, you know, kind of the way hunting was when we came off of the don't shoot does. That was maxing out the deer population,
yes,
right? But nobody really wants to do that anymore. Nobody's trying to like. You don't hear people go, man, I'm going to do these techniques to get as many deer as possible
That's right.
My property.
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear, but in turkey world, you know, this idea, and this is going to be off the top of my head, but one of the things I was reading in a research project they did, and they had a, like an 8,000 acre piece of property, like for unhunted to try to, you know, to have that as the standard, and then worked on numbers on hunted properties, and they could get the numbers up on the hunted properties if they managed a certain way to the same it was on the unhunted track, because it fills, I guess the population fills in. But they said something like it was on their other tracks, it was like maybe they were killing one bird for 1,000 acres, okay, or something like that, one or two birds for 1,000 acres with unmanaged.
Right.
They had the control property over there to show that. Then they habitat managed, and by year three, they were killing a turkey every 200 acres
on
that property.
That's a big difference.
So, maxing out turkeys. We'll come back, talk about this a whole lot more. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you here. Reminder, too, if you're just catching part of the show or want to go back and listen to past outdoor shows, the podcast page, a couple ways you can do it. Number one, you can go to the FM Talk 106.5 app, which I hope you've downloaded. It's waiting for you over if you're an iPhone user, go to the App Store. If you are an Android user, go to Google Play and just look for FM TALK 1065. And all kind of stuff going on in the app, but it's also the first place the podcast posts. But if you don't do that, you can go to fmtalk1065.com, click the podcast tab, and find the outdoor show there or any of the podcast platforms you're subscribed on. Just search for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and you'll get these shows, and you can go back and listen you know, to a past show. You can listen like last week or last year, so you can go deep dive on that. And turkey talk, obviously we're going to do a bunch more of that going forward.
Sure.
It's a... It's interesting, though. Those studies are out there on maximizing, and it's a weird thing to think about, but what can you do? Now, I get it, and the tough thing is if you're leasing land, right, this is where this trapping versus habitat versus all these things, okay, if you're leasing land and you don't have the right to do anything.
That's right. You don't have the right to go burn.
Burn or thin or any of those things. Okay, then now you're in a pickle. That's why... Like, I think it gets contentious online and people fighting all the time about this. There are scientists out there saying, in a perfect world, if you have all the tools available to you, here's habitat's more important than trapping.
Yeah, I can see that.
But let me flip it around and say, if you're on a place that doesn't have, you don't have the lease land or whatever, you don't have the ability to do that, okay, but you can trap. It's not the perfect thing like that, but it's the thing you can do. So, and one of the things, too, about this predator swamping idea, and it exists in all kind of critters, where all the babies are born at one time, because predators can't get them all. I mean, if you let nature go without the influence of man, you know, let it go for periods of time, like an island where nobody, they'll get in a system where they all drop at the same time.
Yeah.
And when that happens, or pretty close to the same time, that happens, like Chuck was talking about. You know, if you figure every night that a hen is on a nest and there's X number of predators on your property, you know, coyotes, but more coons and possums.
And hogs.
But, you know, the each time, okay, let's say that, that the time from when the hens lay the nest, lay the eggs, to incubate them to now get them to the point where they can pitch up in a tree.
Yeah.
You know, that once they pitch up in the tree, all is good. So all those nights with the predators on the ground, if you have all these hens nesting at the same time, predators are going to get some.
Yep.
But they can't get them all.
Yeah.
And that's the game being played. Strength in numbers, hiding in numbers, or whatever it is. That's how that works. And so we're trying to, just like those getting deer drop at the same time, try and do that with turkeys on the breeding side. But the trapping part of it is, I also look at trapping as trying to be like, okay, so Casey will come on with us from the Management Advantage, right? And, you know, he traps all the time, just trapping. But he also says, if you're trying to affect, when he comes down here from Illinois and spends a lot of time in Alabama, he's trapping coyotes in the summertime. Because in those places, they're trying to save fawns.
Yeah. So he get rid of them at the time that
right,
the
because
deer
you can't get rid of them forever.
Yeah.
Right? You can't get, I mean, the nature of it is you take all the coyotes off your property and other coyotes migrate in.
Yeah.
And the stuff I've talked about, the crazy stuff, the science that shows that female coyotes will have more pups the fewer coyotes are out there.
Yeah.
That they somehow sense it. They said that they don't hear other howls or whatever, and they watch the number of pups that a female coyote will have will be based on filling in the available space. Well, you know, on the turkey side of it too, I like to trap hard around going into nesting season. You know, I mean, that's the thing about, because you could trap, and I mean, you know, you're trapping, let's say you're, I mean, it's not a bad thing, you're trapping raccoons, possum, whatever, in the wintertime, that's fine, but the chances of that space being empty from a predator by the time that hen's on a nest, there's a chance another raccoon or possum or whatever comes in. So
absolutely.
if you could almost, the way we talk about the predator swamping when it comes to all the babies of whatever critter it is being born at the same time, I like to trap swamp them. You know what I'm saying? So, because I know that if I take, you know, 47 coons out or possum or whatever, that at least for that window of time, I've given those nests a better chance. So if you're somewhere where you can't do habitat management, but you can do trapping, really targeted trapping may be the best thing that you can do.
And the dog-proof traps are the easiest ones to use. And I need to do that. But it's a time factor, too,
right,
for most people.
Right, and you have to be up there.
It's a time factor.
You have to be up there because you have to, and, you know, you cannot leave 24-hour, you know, unattended.
That's right.
So you got to check your traps. And, yeah, I dealt with that. I'm lucky enough to have a place close, and I can trap all the time. But in the past, yeah, I'd have to go Sunday afternoon and kick my trap. I call it kicking the trap, unset them.
That's right. Yeah, you don't want the animal to be sitting there.
You can't
all week.
Legally, you can't do it.
Yeah,
but yeah,
right.
it's also I'd say immoral.
That's right. It is,
because those don't know, dog proof is not killing them. It's just, it's like a handcuff, and it holds them there until you come up and shoot them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, this whole debate on the turkey thing, there's a lot of parts to it. I think what they're trying to explain is from a state agency, they can't affect those other things. What they can try to do is keep. The other things they can't change that are killing the turkeys, but they can keep us from killing those turkeys too early. Because once the gobbler's bred, the hens, you talk to all the scientists, they're like, kill them.
Yeah.
Once he's done that thing, they're super precious. They're super precious until those hens are bred. And at that point, they said, you really won't affect the long-term population of the property if you take the gobblers off then.
Yeah.
So that's the idea behind it.
Yeah. If it didn't get so hot, You could.
I know it does. It does get hot, but also, yeah. I got stories from, you know, and I go back and look at pictures. Some of those May, the first year we had that first weekend in May, so turkey season. It was like 38 or something like this. So I've had cold, you know.
But most of the time it's not
right.
You know, and mosquitoes and the gnats and the snakes.
I know, but here's the problem:
and the property's thickened up, and you know, there's a lot of things.
All those things are true.
Yeah,
but that's just convenience. Versus if you're trying to have more turkeys.
Yeah.
You know, and so many places are dealing with this decline in turkeys. The Southeast is first, but we're seeing it Kansas.
Yeah. It's from what people tell me, because I've only been out there for 2 years, but people tell me from the years past, you would see a group of 150 over in this pasture, and you go down, it'd be 200, or go on down, it might be a group of 300. And now, I mean, you just don't see very many turkeys out there. And I know I didn't. I did a lot of riding and looking, and there wasn't a lot of turkeys that I saw out there, I can tell you.
So they may be going through the same problems they starting are. Out there that we started a decade or two ago. Yes. All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We ran late.
So yep.
It's all right. By the way, just to add this, because we talked about turkey talk coming up over the next couple months. Also, fishing talk aplenty. We talked to Captain Wayne Miller talking bass fishing. Captain Bobby Everscotto and I were talking the other day to get him to come on, you know, for an hour with us and talk some, looking at late winter into springtime trout fishing.
And then we got the boat show coming up.
Yep, that's March 3rd, yeah.
Yep, be a lot of folks down there, all the I'm sure the regular folks are usually down there, Bobby and Wayne Miller,
yep,
a bunch of guys.
So, oh yeah, that's coming up. That's our Guides Corner comes up during the Mobile Boat Show. We'll talk about that. But even between now and then, obviously got some fishing to talk about, you know. And, I mean, February, well, it's not the, you know, it's Bobby and I were joking the other day, it's not exactly a great trout month, but bass fishing.
Oh, yeah.
February is dang good. You know, right now with the rivers flooded and all that, it's not great. But if you got, you know, water that's not affected by the river system, that's a dang good time to catch a big bass.
Good. That's right. And to catch the bigger bass of the year.
Yeah. So I'm saying your biggest bass, you know, February, March, April. But, I mean, February has been good to me over the years.
Oh, it has been for me, too. We've caught some big ones in February.
And sometimes they don't know it's February. I had a good one the other day, not big, but a pretty good one. I mean, it's cold outside. It was cold the night before, and you know me, I like to throw a frog. I just walk out on the dock to throw a frog because that's just what I want to do.
Yeah, that's all you throw.
Well, I throw a frog a lot. I mean, if times get tough, I will throw other stuff. But if I'm walking down to do the old three cast before I, you know, get dinner started,
yeah,
you know, I throw a frog.
Yeah.
Hey, cold, high pressure, boom, hits a frog.
How about that? Yeah. Good one?
3.5 or so, but I mean,
yeah.
Chunky one, yeah. But I mean, it's not just like, I catch them, I think I've caught a bass on a frog every month of the year, and more often in the wintertime, it's those times where it warms up a little bit. It's still, water's still cold, but it's warming up a little bit, you know, between fronts or whatever. This was like high pressure.
It's like when the snakes come out.
That one, yes.
It warms up enough where the snakes come out,
yeah,
and the fish start biting.
There you go. So just put your snake boots on. All right, we'll do it all again next week, and appreciate you listening. Remember, podcast available coming up in the next hour or so. It'll post up so you can listen again or go listen to past episodes or share this show with your friends.